20. Locke ploughed into a group of running people, knocked them aside, and got away from them as quickly as she could. All around her was screaming and smoke and fire.
"Locke!"
came forth in a roar, and Jell, the Earth Demon, stomped after her former captain, smashing aside anyone luckless enough to be in her way. Locke cut across the field, where there were fewer people, and then pivoted and dove as a blast of fire scored across the green grass in front of her. Up in the sky, Mr. Dragon roared.
"Now look at this," the Manticore said up on the glamour screens. "There's a woman down there, an Urujar woman, and it looks like she's directing the dragon and the Earth Demon as they continue their rampage."
Locke hit a sand court with a pair of narrowly spaced bars where acrobats had competed moments ago. She leaped onto the sand as flame ripped across the grass behind her, saw a young woman hiding behind the post holding up one of the bars, and changed direction, stumbling in the sand. Jell stood in front of her on the grass.
"Locke!"
She had already pulled herself into a humanoid shape and even had a definable feminine form, albeit one made of dirt and grass.
"You cannot run." "Yes, this woman is clearly commanding the demon, as we can see from this angle," the Griffin said on the glamour screens. "At this point, taking down this woman may be the only hope of stopping these deadly attacks."
"You ever get tired of killing people, Jell?" Locke saw that the young woman by the post had gotten clear of the immediate danger.
"Do you?"
Jell came in swinging, and Locke stepped in and caught the great earthen arm in the hook of her walking stick. She pivoted, twisted, hurled Jell into the sand where she'd been standing, and then dove to the side as the sound of the flapping wings overhead turned into the quick whip-womp she'd learned to expect. A gout of flame ripped down where Locke had been standing, sizzling into Jell, who roared in pain and crashed back into the sand. Locke hoped the young woman was far away by now. She hoped everyone was far away by now. And except for occasionally getting the two things chasing her to trip each other up, there wasn't a damned thing she could do about it. She was poison, and anything near her was going to get killed. Glaring up at the dragon and down at the scorched but still moving Jell, Locke turned and began running. Right now, that was what she could do. The elves in the mine stocking bay had knives. The dwarves had hammers or picks. All of them had blank looks of mindless obedience as they held up their weapons and came at Tern, Icy, and Ululenia.
"As the queen who eats her mate when she is finished with him," Ululenia's voice rang in Tern's mind. "I am sex and death, desire and destruction. They will die in ecstasy, knowing that I was their fulfillment, my pleasure their end."
Tern turned to Ululenia and slapped her sharply across the face.
"You are a nice unicorn, and a pretty unicorn, dammit. Now knock them out with your mind thing and get to the damn processing center."
Ululenia was silent for a moment, and Tern wondered if this was the moment when it all finally ended. Then she said,
"You are brave, little human. It amuses me."
Ululenia's horn flared, and the elves and dwarves all stopped swaying in place. Their jaws hung slack, but their weapons were still raised.
"I suspect even she cannot confuse the minds of so many for long," Icy said. "We must hurry."
He took Tern's hand and pulled her through the crowd. There were too many of them to completely avoid, and Icy moved the workers aside gently. They stumbled when he did, but did not fall, nor did any of the benumbed react from bumping into each other.
"I can feel them all," Ululenia said, and Tern thought optimistically that she sounded a little more like herself. "They are enthralled, dominated by old magic. It is coiled around them as a serpent takes the hair tighter and tighter, not to kill, but to break the breath of their minds, until only servitude remains."
And damn it, now she sounded sexy again. Icy gently pushed a dwarf aside.
"Can you sense the source of that control?"
"I could," Ululenia said, "if I crawled into their minds, just a little more, and caressed their cravings, pushed their pain, drank of their dreams, just a little." Every dwarf and elf in the room let out a long, slow breath. Then as one, they said,
"Arching!"
That is not necessary, Icy said quickly. You are doing well, and as your friends, we appreciate your help, Ululenia.
Just hold them still, Tern added.
Hold them still.
Harder, every elf and dwarf in the room said.
Icy gave Tern a worried look. The double doors were open, and Icy and Tern stepped through into the upper level of the mine itself. To the right, mine carts filled with red glowing crystals sat next to the mine leading down to the tunnels. Over to the left, the giant Yveskaphar door to the processing center had been repaired, and a massive new lock held it shut.
Guess I'm on.
Tern pulled out her safe-cracking tools, plugged her stethoscope into her ears, and held it to the great lock.
Bejeweled, said every elf and dwarf.
Tern looked back over her shoulder. They were not coming after Tern and Icy, but they had all turned around to look.
How quickly do you believe you can bypass the lock? Icy asked.
Bosom. Working on it.
Tern wedged a pry bar into a seam and popped the panel off, revealing a lot of crystals and metal plating.
Dwarven, basically, but with more enchantments than they'd use. Failsafes, too. I trip anything wrong, the entire deal slams shut, and we spend a week burning through the door.
They want to be free, Ululenia said in Tern's mind.
Tern heard the clopping of hooves as the unicorn, or whatever she was now, came through the docking bay.
They would prefer death. I would be doing them a kindness to oblige, and I would be very kind.
Consider haste, Icy murmured.
Tern tapped a crystal-tipped pick against the door itself, brought another crystal pick toward one of the plates, and listened carefully.
Haste isn't happening, Icy.
She started at a metal clank behind her, but it was only the mining lift heading down, presumably to pick up another load.
You cannot fight your nature forever, Ululenia said,
her hooves clopping as she left the crowd and came to Icy and Tern.
You could not, could you, Laridae? The girl who wished for a life different from that of a guildsman's daughter.
Curling, said the elves and dwarves.
Tern glanced over and saw that their arms hung slack. All of them were sweating. She went back to testing the harmonics and the crystals and tried to go a little faster, which was always a good idea when safe-cracking.
This is not you, Ululenia, Icy said. I know who you are. You do not kill for pleasure.
You did, unstoppable, deferential fist.
Ululenia's voice seemed honestly sad.
Now you try to live a different life, but when you watch your friends fight, your mind walks through how you could have done better. Is it not exhausting? Do you not wonder how much more you could be if you did not spend every waking moment fighting who you are?
Caress!
The elves and dwarves moaned a little after they said it.
This is the magic of the Dark Fae, Icy said, and not a choice you made. I will accept exhaustion if it stops me from being corrupted by something I do not wish to be.
Tern tapped a crystal panel gingerly, heard it chime, and slid a pick into the lock.
Do you not see? I wish to kill you, Ululenia said. And I can fight that, because as the salmon knows her spawning grounds, I sense the friendship that was once pure and simple between us. But these creatures would kill me. They are prey.
Nice unicorn,
Tern muttered, as a crystal panel shifted from red to green under her touch.
Pretty unicorn. Decadent.
There was definitely moaning among the elves and dwarves now.
Do not, Icy said. Please.
They will die knowing pleasure most only dream of, and their deaths will sate me. It is a good bargain, unstoppable, deferential fist.
Desire.
Icy stepped away from Tern and put himself between Ululenia and the crowd.
My name, he said, is Icy.
The mining lift clanked again behind Tern as it came back up.
Your beast has been corrupted, said a rough voice by the lift. It will be tamed.
Tern looked back from the door she was working on with a tiny sigh. Four hunter golems rose up in the mining lift, their fairy-killing spears and magical nets ready for battle. Growing up, Kale had liked chatting with the puppeteers after the show. They were genial men who liked entertaining crowds and saw a lot of the Republic in their travels. Kale had loved the griffin puppet because it was nicer, on balance, to Urujar, and the dragon puppet because it breathed fire, and breathing fire was cool. Kale had always known that the puppeteers worked from a script sent down from the heads of the Puppeteers Guild on Heaven's Spire, but he suspected that actually capturing the words of one central puppeteer and transmitting the message across the entire Republic was new. None of that was good, and, more importantly, none of it changed the fact that Kale's actual job was to disable the part of the font that directed the flow of energy up to Heaven's Spire, and that job had not accounted for there being five people wearing paladin bands that Kale had to get through to do that. The room had no overhead lamps. All the light came from the dozen giant crystal panes the five paladins were looking at. Six of the panes showed views of the stadium, where a dragon and a demon, presumably Jell, were chasing Locke and generally wrecking havoc. Other panes displayed what the puppet show looked like to everyone in the Republic, along with a bunch of charts and graphs with coloured bars on them, that Kale recognised from his airship piloting experience as a general. "Hey, how are things going? Is anything going to explode?" Read out.
"I can't very well sell Locke as a mastermind if the dragon keeps attacking her, Mr. Skinner," said Slant. "The beast doesn't like taking direction," Skinner said, sounding annoyed. "You want me to kill her, you want me not to kill her. Make up your mind." "I won't struggle," said Slant. "Have it burn down part of the stadium, could you? Scrying pod 4, replay from 2 minutes ago. Griffin, history of the festival and apologize for the Urujar. Go." "Fine," Skinner muttered. "Starting to leave the stadium, though. Can't direct what I can't see."
In front of the crystal panes, Kale saw control consoles that, as far as he could tell, nobody was using. The puppeteers were working their puppets, and Slant was working his paladin band, tapping at buttons and looking from pane to pane.
"Yes, yes, there. See, we've got a little smirk from Locke when she talks to the demon. We zoom in on that and cut from pod 2, dragon burning down the seats, to the replay on pod 4, her smirking on my mark. Oh, look at you, little warrior woman. Just a little too much confidence in your face. Nothing the crowds hate more than a woman who doesn't keep her head down. For those of you just joining, the Republic Festival of Excellence has been interrupted by a vicious attack," the Griffin said somberly. "Originally intended as a celebration of the capability for anyone in the Republic to achieve greatness with hard work and perseverance, it has instead become a sad example of the violence embraced by those who believe the rules don't apply to them. And mark. Manticore, ready on counterpoint."
Kale watched as the dragon destroyed a section of seats with too many damn people in it, and then the glamour screens cut abruptly to Locke smirking.
"It's important to remind all viewers that there are countless Urujar in the Republic who wish only to live in peace and work like any other citizen," the Griffin went on. "And an attack by one unbalanced individual cannot and must not be taken as a true representation of the rich culture that our Urujar friends bring us." "Well, I don't know."
The manticore swished its scorpion's tail, getting ready to attack.
"You look at the crime statistics, and criminals are disproportionately Urujar."
One of the panes abruptly flared white and then went black. Slant swore.
"Damn it, we lost 5. Play back on 1.
A different pane began to run backward, which made Kale's head hurt a little bit, but Slant was nodding.
"Ah, wizard. Cast a spell at the dragon, catch his scrying pod 5. Here."
In the pane where Slant pointed, Kale saw a man in robes fling out his hand, and little sparkling motes flared out in a cone. They caught a small crystal mote in the sky, and the mote exploded with a brilliant flare of energy that knocked everyone up in the stands backward.
"Pull the pods back from the dragon, in case anyone else gets ideas. I'm down to 5, and I said I needed a full dozen, since the slightest bit of magic makes a damned thing turn into a giant light show, but no. This place has half its damned crystals devoted to channeling the font at the key moment, so I only get..." "Fine," said Skinner. "Going up. Hard to see the beast now." "And kill that wizard, would you?" Slant added. "I've got a heroes and tragedy segment planned later, but I need guards for that, not wizards. Nobody likes wizards."
Kale slid into the shadows as Skinner came toward him. There was a section of wall that bubbled out, probably to make room for the giant gout of fire on the other side, and he pressed himself to it. Skinner didn't even look as he stomped up the ladder, muttering to himself. Four, then. Kale looked at the panes that had the readouts instead of the pictures. Some of them were tied to a little map, and one pane in particular was lit up with a little fire icon. That looked promising.
I don't think this is the time to be talking about Urujar committing crimes, the griffin said,
raising its claws and ready to fight.
This is a lone individual, and if it were a white man, we certainly wouldn't. But most white people don't commit crimes, the manticore insisted, leaping at the griffin.
The two of them thrashed and rolled, wings flailing wildly.
It begs the question of what's wrong with the Urujar culture that is creating so many criminals.
The pane with the fire icon was off to one side, actually close to the ladder. Slant and the puppeteers weren't even looking at it.
More fire, more fire. Keep the idiotic yelling going there for a minute and I'll have a splash for you, Slant said absently.
Slowly and quietly, Kale crept toward the pane with the fire icon.
The Urujar culture was devastated by slavery, the griffin cried, throwing the manticore free. And when you factor in socio-economic status, they are no more likely to break the law than any other group.
Kale reached the pane and very quietly started pressing buttons. The console below hummed, and a crystal popped out of a slot with a little chirp. Kale pressed some more buttons, then moved to pull the crystal free.
Wait! Slant cried,
and Kale froze, then looked over. The blonde man was looking at one of the panes,